Welcome to Reconquest on the Crusade Premium Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. This is Brother Andre Marie coming to you from St. Benedict Center in Richmond, New Hampshire. Our websites are Catholicism.org and Reconquest.net. I can be reached by email, BAM, B-A-M, at Catholicism.org. I'm also found on Twitter at Brother_Andre. And you can look me up easily on Facebook. Just search for Brother Andre Marie, and you will find one of my Facebook presences. The subject this evening is Anatomy of a Hack Job. Anatomy of a Hack Job. And I have no guess. It's going to be me all by my lonesome. And the hack job that I will be doing an anatomy on is the hack job that recently showed up, sort of a smear piece that showed up in USA Today. It was published on February 19th. And the title is Right-Wing Fringe Group Building Multimedia Empire Near Detroit. And this is published by USA Today. It's on their website. And the byline is Robert Allen of the Detroit Free Press. Now, I'm going to be approaching this piece from different angles. First of all, let me give what I think is sort of the socio-political background to this article. Whether or not you like President Donald J. Trump, it is a fact that there has been a serious sea change in American public life. Now, some people who are cynical about Trump or about certain aspects of his policies are going to say that the sea change is only superficial and certain agendas are going to continue to progress forward with no change. Okay, all that aside, there is no question that there has been a sea change. There is no question that there has been a major shift, especially in the way information gets out about the president. And of course, the liberal media, by and large, I mean practically to a man really, were for Hillary and wanted her to win and were very anti-Trump. And Trump, of course, in his own caustic way and very pugnacious and aggressive way, was constantly calling out the media and calling them liars and things like that. The man is certainly not shy. Say what you will about him, but he's not shy. He called out the media. And of course, conservatives of different stripes kind of liked that. That somebody finally had the courage not to keep pandering to them, but to just come out and sort of punch them in the nose verbally, which they very much deserve, let's face it. So there's been a massive change. And since Trump has been in the White House, he has really violated most, if not all, of the rules of how a president is supposed to interact with the media. And the media themselves, the major media, obviously, there's all sorts of media out there. I'm engaged in media right now. I'm using the medium of internet radio to get this message out. But we know what we mean by media. In other words, the major media, the big guys, they don't like this because essentially their longtime crumbling monopoly on getting news into people's hands is crumbling at a faster pace. It's been crumbling for years with blogs and social networks and all that, but it's crumbling faster with Trump because he doesn't go along with them. And he only, as I record this now, it was only yesterday that Trump by name excluded certain organizations from an informal presser that was held in the White House, and some other news organizations, CNN and New York Times, I believe, were excluded because of things that they did told Trump that he wasn't, they weren't going to give him a fair rap anyway. And then to express their solidarity with these other news organizations. The AP and I think some others boycotted it. All this is background. So there has been a sea change. There's been a disturbance in the force, to use the terminology of Star Wars. And the big guys in print and television media really, really don't like this. So that's part of this. That's part of what goes into what I believe has gone into this story that's in USA Today. Another part of it, also connected to the Trump presidency, is the very odd set of conspiracy theories that are coming out. And you can see some of these documented, or at least referenced with links, on the Catholicism.org webpage. The odd conspiracy theories concerning some of the Catholics that surround Donald Trump, especially Stephen Bannon. Now, Steve Bannon, I don't know much about the man. He was in charge of Breitbart News for a time. And he is a Catholic, and he is a Catholic who is conservative, but not mainstream conservative. He's sort of anti-establishment, in as much as he's bucked the Republican establishment. And he tends to be anti-big money and pro-little guy, pro-middle America, and all of those things which would get, you know, real freedom-loving conservatives and even people like me who I mean, I'm really a monarchist, but I'm economically, I'd be a distributist, I'd be for, you know, giving the little guy a chance to make it in the world without having to get be beholden to all of these enormous financial megaliths. You know, that's one of the things that's made him a bad guy. So he doesn't play by the rules either. Now, I'm not lionizing him. I'm not lionizing Trump. I mean, I pray for them both. I pray for the country. I hope the best happens for the prosperity of the nation, but most of all for the salvation of souls. All that said, this forms the background. It has to be appreciated that there is a long history of wacko conspiracy theories concerning the Catholic Church in this country. Yes, there are wacko conspiracy theories about every group that has any sort of influence. I understand that. There are just wacko conspiracy theories, period. But the long history of anti-Catholic wacko conspiracy theories it goes back at least to the 19th century, when all these immigrants are coming over from Ireland, from Germany, from Italy, from other places in the old world, fleeing whatever their social problems were there and coming here. And there were conspiracy theories that one of the funniest ones was that the Jesuits were going to have a Jesuit king of the United States, and they were going to move the capital from Washington, D.C. to St. Louis, Missouri. That personally is my favorite conspiracy theory. And because, of course, the St. Louis, by the way, the thin layer of truth that's in all of this silliness is that St. Louis, Missouri happened to be a major center for the Jesuits. So they were going to move the capital to St. Louis, and this Jesuit king of the United States is going to report directly to the Pope and be essentially a puppet of the Pope in the running of the United States. This formed something of a kind of a Protestant cottage industry of publishing booklets and tracts and things like that, warning people about the great Catholic takeover of the United States. It kind of went hand in hand with a similar cottage industry, call it Puritan porn, if you will, to use a phrase by my friend C. Joseph Doyle of the Massachusetts Catholic Action League. Joe refers to Catholic porn when he's referring to the story of Maria Monk and similar books that were written supposedly exposing the horrors of Catholic convent life and all of the corruption and debauchery that was associated with it. For those who don't know, Maria Monk was a prostitute who claimed that she had been in a Catholic convent for a time, and then with the help of somebody who was actually literate, wrote a book about her experiences. And of course, there was a lot of salacious and lascivious trash as part of the book, and that's why Joe calls it Protestant pornography. They couldn't get their hands on the real stuff, so they made up these things under the guise of one of their favorite pastimes, which is anti-Catholicism. They put in all of this salacious stuff. Maria Monk's story was very much discredited, and she went back to her former way of life and ended up, I think, being killed by one of her clients. So the woman's a very sad case. But her book and the fact that it was not the only such book fueled things like the Charlestown, Massachusetts Ursuline convent fire. You know, you'd have these drunken hordes of Puritans. I know that sounds like a contradiction in terms, but it really happened. Who stormed the convent and burned it down because they thought that all of these, the excuse was that all of these horrors were going to be taking place in there. And of course, nothing of the sort took place there. Anyway, long story short, there was a long history of wacko conspiracy theories about the Catholic Church in the United States. And in some people's minds, these things were not unreasonable when they were done. And in some people's minds, they'd still be considered reasonable. You know, some people might even think that there was a legitimate threat that the Jesuits were going to take over the United States in the 19th century. I don't know. But Steve Bannon is part of Trump's cabinet. Steve Bannon is a Catholic. Steve Bannon once gave a lecture to a group in Rome that's not even deeply conservative. It's like conservative-ish, and it's called the Dignitatis Humani Institute, and they fight for the dignity of the human person. They have all kinds of speakers there. They have all kinds of people, including cardinals and bishops, who are on their board or whose name is on their letterhead, and they have including Cardinal Burke. Okay, so importantly, Steve Bannon spoke at a conference with an organization that has Cardinal Burke as one of the cardinals whose name appears on their either their board of directors or some kind of board of advisors or something like that. They have other cardinals who are very, very liberal whose names also appear there. This is kind of a broad spectrum group. It's not ideological. They're trying to do things to promote the dignity of the human person internationally. But for the conspiracy mind, that connects Burke directly to Bannon. So there's the Burke-Bannon nexus. And of course, since Bannon only works for Trump, then there's a Burke-Trump nexus. And of course, Cardinal Burke is in the news a lot lately because of his opposition to the liberal heresies that are being spewed among his fellow cardinals and bishops, and apparently even the Pope himself in his recent apostolic exhortation, post-synodal apostolic exhortation, Amoris Laetitia, about marriage. So Cardinal Burke has put himself and his career and his red hat on the line to defend marriage against this horrendous heresy that's challenging Catholic teaching on marriage. So Cardinal Burke, to the blinkered, blindfolded eyes of the liberal, who is against the Catholic Church's traditional teaching on marriage and on the family and on abortion and on contraception and all those other hot button issues of morality, to such a person, Cardinal Burke is a bad guy. So you tie in Cardinal Burke with another bad guy, Steve Bannon, who's tied into yet a third bad guy who's not even Catholic and who certainly is not a poster child for Catholic moral teachings concerning marriage, Donald Trump. And you've got a wacko conspiracy theory that somehow Burke is going to try to take over the church with the aid of Trump, who's trying to take over the United States and whatever. You've got this strange, menacing nexus of nasty people plotting to do something or other and presumably tie up liberals and throw them in closets. So this sort of hysteria that's surrounding both the Trump administration in the United States and Cardinal Burke in the Catholic Church, which obviously the Catholic Church in the United States have some overlap. Otherwise, I, a Catholic, wouldn't be in the United States. So there's a lot of there are a lot of people kind of collectively hysterical over this phenomenon of this alleged tie-in. Now, it really is alleged. Cardinal Burke may have met Steve Bannon once. I don't know. I don't know either man, so I couldn't say. But the bottom line is this is of the background. The press is losing its – the mainstream media has lost its information monopoly, and there are conspiracy theories about conservative Catholics and their influence with the Trump administration and their influence among a sort of resurgent class of super Orthodox Catholics wanting to take over the church and kind of undo Vatican II and all that stuff. I'm using the language of the hysterical people. This is not my chosen language. Now, the term church militant is a term in the Catholic lexicon that has a real concrete fixed meaning. In addition to that, it has other sort of derivative meanings as well. The primary meaning is that church militant is one third, perhaps not numerically, but as far as parts go, it's one third of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church, the mystical body of Jesus Christ, is made up of three parts and will go in descending order. It's the church triumphant in heaven. In purgatory, among those souls who are being purged of their sins and the effects of sins and so forth and are awaiting entrance into the beatific vision, it is called the church suffering. And here on earth, it is called the church militant. And why is it called the church militant? Because, as Holy Job says in the book of Job, life on earth is a warfare. This is a very Old Testament concept. And he did not mean life on earth is armed conflict against other men. Of course, that exists. But what he meant was there is a spiritual war. And of course, St. Paul would say that our wrestling is not against flesh and blood, but against, and I'm paraphrasing here, the demons, the devil and his minions. So there is this spiritual war, and as long as we are alive, we could go either way. We could be taken over. We could be conquered and vanquished by our enemies, the world, the flesh, and the devil, whom we must fight as the sources of temptation and betrayal of God. Or we could stay on the right side, stay in the state of grace, stay in God's friendship, and stay in God's love and be holy, and we die that way. And then we go, if we have to spend some time through the church suffering and purgatory, we end up in the church triumphant in heaven. So the whole concept of the church militant is that it is that portion of the mystical body of Christ which dwells on this earth still in this what we call the veil of tears in the Catholic devotional lexicon. So that's what church militant means theologically. It's a very old term, and it's something that Catholics have long used, and there's absolutely nothing in it to convey the meaning of literal armed conflict with other people. It really is the spiritual struggle, the interior struggle. I mean, monks engaged in this sort of militancy of combating the world, the flesh, and the devil. So it's got nothing to do with whether you're a soldier or a scholar or a monk or a housewife or a farmer. It's got nothing to do with any of that. We're all part of the church militant if we're Catholics on this earth. One of the derived meanings of church militant is that we have to have a certain militancy about professing our faith. Now, I say it's a derived meaning. I'm not saying it's a badly derived meaning. I'm not saying it's incorrect, but it's a derived meaning, and it's rather implicit in the concept that on earth, we are fighting the world, the flesh, and the devil. Now, the standards of the world are given to us by people who are votaries of the world, people who reject the doctrines of Christ and the church, and who instead impose their own doctrines upon us. And this would include those who are, say, pro-abortion, pro-birth control, anti-marriage. And when I say anti-marriage, I mean equating the lawful wedlock of a man and a woman in a Christian sacrament with the union of two sodomites or the union of two lesbians. The there is no equal sign between those things. The one is marriage legitimately, and even natural marriage is non-sacramental between two Jewish people, two Hindus, two Muslims, whatever, two atheists, okay, who are not baptized. That's a legitimate natural marriage. It's not a Christian sacrament, but it's a legitimate natural marriage. And you can use the word marriage for that and for the Christian sacrament, but you cannot use it for the union of two men or two women or any of this crazy polyamory stuff that's going around where you have these marriages of whatever, five or more people. That's not marriage, and we have to insist on that. Now, when people want to impose that on us in the political realm or in schools or wherever, we have to fight that agenda. We have to fight that agenda to protect our children. We have to fight that agenda to protect our own rights. And yeah, we ultimately, the rights of real married people are going to be harmed when two sodomites parade as married people and get the same rights. Because if you take rights that really belong to X class of people, you're taking away their legitimate rights. You cannot equate those things. So there's a huge, obviously, culture war surrounding these and similar issues. So, by a derived meaning, church militant is applied to this sort of culture warrior combat. And a gentleman named Michael Voris heads up a news organization. It's called St. Michael's Media. That's the parent company, I believe. And they have churchmilitant.com is their main outlet. It's a website. And you can subscribe to their there's free stuff and then there's paid stuff. Now, a lot of my listeners probably know who Michael Voris is and know about Church Militant and would have seen the news related very charmingly by Miss Christine Niles, and would have seen some of the other offerings that they have either that are free or paid. And they put out a lot of good things. But USA Today did a hack job on them, and the hack job was the one that I referred to earlier. This is the piece. Again, it's right-wing fringe group building multimedia empire near Detroit. So speaking of media empires, this is USA Today, and USA Today's parent company is Gannett. I don't think it's Gannett Broadcasting Company. It's Gannett. Now, Gannett owns a lot of city newspapers all over the country, and one of them is the Detroit Free Press. So the byline in this article is Robert Allen of the Detroit Free Press. So the Detroit Free Press being owned by the same parent company, they just have the guy's article. They run it in USA Today because they own both of them. So this is an enormous media empire writing about a little but growing multimedia empire that they don't like. I'm going to read to you I'm going to read to you the thing that we published on our website under the name of the philosopher. That's the byline. The philosopher is somebody who writes for our website. I can't reveal his real identity. USA Today ran a lengthy piece on Michael Voris, St. Michael's Media and Church Militant under the headline Right-Wing Fringe Group Building Multimedia Empire Near Detroit. Da-da-da-da-da. Okay, I already told you this part. Okay. It's almost surreal to read a piece written with faux journalistic objectivity and disinterestedness when it is obviously the work of one interested party in the culture and religion wars attacking another via the genre of print journalism. Here's a little taste. So here's the way the article starts. I'm going to add more to what I had in there. Let's see. Inside a plain two-story brick building in Ferndale hums the nerve center for a growing religious group, hoping the forces that elected President Donald Trump will tear down the wall between church and state. That's pretty menacing. Church Militant, a fringe group claiming to be Catholic but denounced by the church, broadcasts pro-life, anti-gay, anti-feminist, Islam-fearing content on its website, churchmilitant.com, and through social media using production studios that rival those of local TV news stations. It has 35 full-time employees who publish about 10 stories and 3 videos every weekday. Now, okay, back to the philosopher's commentary. Anyone can call anyone a fringe group. It's cheap and easy. Big media, of course, reserves to itself the right to define what normal is, which puts any dissenting opinion on the fringe. This is important. I mean, if whether or not you're part of the fringe, to me, depends upon what I consider the middle. The fringe is something that's on the outside. Well, what's on the inside? Well, if I'm a moderate and you disagree with me, then I can call you an extremist. It's all relative. So when the media defines what the new normal is, then they can say who's on the fringe. So they dictate what's normal. You're on the fringe if you disagree with them, and then they get to call you names. It's a very easy trick. Abortion advocating feminists and homosexualists would constitute a fringe to you if you consider Christian social order to be normative. But in USA Today's new normal, those hyphenated adjectives that modify Church Militant's content are a small litany of boogeyman words designed to trigger a code red in their more liberal readership. And by the way, what are those hyphenated words? Pro-life, anti-gay, anti-feminist, Islam-fearing. These are all hyphenated words. So pro-life, obviously, they're anti-abortion. That's bad. They want to take away a woman's right to choose. Anti-gay, which, by the way, anti-gay could mean a number of things. Literally, it would be somebody who's against people being happy, but they certainly don't mean that. It could be that there's an ambiguity of meaning when you apply it to homosexuals, though, because it could mean it could be used to describe somebody who simply holds what the Catholic Church holds about the intrinsically disordered nature of homosexual acts, and that even homosexual tendencies are disordered. This is in the current Catechism of the Catholic Church. It might not be taught very much, but it's there. And of course, this is the perennial, traditional, and God taught, divinely revealed teaching on homosexuality, that it is that homosexual acts are wrong, that the tendency towards those sins is disordered, and it must be resisted like any sin. I mean, no sin's good. No sin is pretty. Just because this one happens to be one of the four sins crying to heaven for vengeance doesn't mean it's the only sin. But if you're, quote, anti-gay, it could also mean that you perpetuate acts of violence or discrimination or hatred towards people who are homosexual. Obviously there are people who are anti-Christian in their approach to homosexuals and would want to do them bodily harm without provocation. And of course, that's not something that we would be for. But if you just say anti-gay, it could mean either one of those things. It could be somebody who wants to help homosexual people get to heaven by living a life of grace, by living a Christian life and resisting the temptation to those disordered mortal sins, which send people to hell. Now, that would describe me. I have encountered homosexuals that I've tried to help. Or it could describe some bubba with a 2x4 who wants to go banging on queers because that's fun, you know, after he's had a few beers. Okay, that's evil. Okay, we can't be for that. But the word anti-gay could mean any of that or anything in between. So anti-feminist, well, I mean, feminism is intrinsically opposed to the social order of the family. I have no problem saying that. I'm anti-feminist, but of course that's a bad word in USA Today. And Islam fearing, well, if you're not Islam fearing, then I guess you're not paying attention to the news. So, but all of these are bad words for the liberal readership of the USA Today. Going right along. Now, here's a lesson. When you do a hit piece on someone, you shouldn't just write it yourself with no expert opinions. That would be too transparent. It would look like you're writing an op-ed piece, which you are, but you don't want to look like you are. So journalistic integrity would demand an expert opinion. The Simon Wiesenthal Center is here to help. Now, here's a quote from the article. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the Simon Wiesenthal Center. And quoting this expert that was quoted in the article by Robert Allen. Quote, Mark Weitzman, based in New York for the Simon Wiesenthal Center, a Jewish human rights organization, describes Church Militant as, quote, radical traditionalist Catholics, end quote. He said such organizations are a small movement, quote, with some influence and the ability to make a lot of noise, end quote. Nice and disparaging. Quote, they espouse, now continuing in the USA Today, they espouse beliefs that God's promises to Jewish people were stripped away and assigned to Christians after the coming of Jesus, resulting in ideas that are theologically, not racially, anti-Semitic, Weitzman said. End of quote from USA Today. If his words were accurately summarized by the journalist, Mr. Wiesenthal, or rather Mr. Weitzman, has attacked every single Christian who believes what St. Paul wrote in Galatians 3:29. Now, Galatians 3:29 talks about us being, if you are Christ, then you are Christ's, then you are the seed of Abraham, heirs according to the promise. This is what St. Paul taught. If you are Christ's, meaning if you're in the church, if you belong to Christ by faith and baptism, then you are the seed of Abraham, heirs according to the promise. But this point of Catholic orthodoxy is branded supersessionism and replacement theology by those who don't like it. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit more later. And there it is. They don't like it. Evidently, the questions of whether God's promises to the Jews were fulfilled in Christ and whether the Mosaic covenant still abides are theological questions. For the Catholic Church, not just fringe groups, they are both questions that have been definitively and infallibly answered in the affirmative and the negative, respectfully. So let me do the math on that, because this is written and you can't see it. God's promises to the Jews were fulfilled in Christ. That's a theological question. That has been answered affirmatively and infallibly by the Catholic Church, that God's promises to the Jewish people were fulfilled in Christ. Whether the Mosaic law still stands is another question, and that has been answered infallibly and negatively by the church. The Mosaic law does not exist anymore. It does not stand. It is not binding anymore, and it is no more a way to holiness, because it has been replaced by the new law of the gospel, by the law of Christ. That is branded as supersessionism and replacement theology by certain liberal Christians and by certain Jews who don't like the idea. And again, it's a question that they don't like it. So if you're Mr. Weitzman and you don't believe it and you don't like it, you can, as an expert in human rights, which is what the Simon Wiesenthal Center claims to be, a human rights organization, as an expert in human rights, you get to call somebody that you disagree with theologically, not racially, anti-Semitic. So he's not saying Michael Voris is racially anti-Semitic, like, you know, the Nazis were, or some lunatic who thinks that Jewish blood is somehow corroded and evil. That's absurd. That's true racism. But he's saying he's not racially anti-Semitic. He's theologically anti-Semitic. And of course, basically what Mr. Weitzman is saying is that if you believe Christian orthodoxy concerning Christ fulfilling the Old Testament and the Mosaic law being brought to an end, then you're theologically anti-Semitic. Excuse me. You are theologically anti-Semitic, and we can't have that. So basically, this gentleman and his organization have put themselves up as Christian thought police. In other words, as thought police for Christians. They're not Christians, but they monitor Christian thought. And this is not acceptable. Okay, moving right along. If he were consistent, he must say the same thing of every father and doctor of the church, as well as all New Testament writers. But the journalist gives him a pass on that because, as a progressivist, he is singing from the same hymn sheet as Mr. Weissman, his hand-picked experts. So that's essentially the message that the philosopher had for us. Some of the commentators on the website, you can find this, by the way, I'll have a link to it from the show details page on reconquest.net. But I called it, or we called it on the site, on Michael Voris and Church Militant, USA Today doesn't get it. And they really don't get it. I mean, it's the same way that the liberal media doesn't get the fact that people don't trust them anymore, and that actually people trust the Trump administration more than they trust the liberal media. But let me focus now a little bit on some of the theological issues that are present here. First of all, actually, I'm going to go back to the Simon Wiesenthal Center, because there are some genuine theological issues that Mr. Weizmann touches on that need to be spoken of, because we can't be cowed by these reckless, irresponsible, and slanderous charges of being anti-Semitic because we believe what the Catholic Church teaches about the Mosaic Law and about Jesus Christ fulfilling the promises to the fathers in the Old Testament. But first, I want to hone in on something that I already read from the article. I'm not going to read the whole article to you. That would be torture for me and also for you. But it says early in the article that it claims to be Catholic. Let's see. A fringe group claiming to be Catholic but denounced by the church. What does that mean? Well, there's a long history between Michael Voris and officials of the Archdiocese of Detroit, at Ferndale, where the organization is based, St. Michael's Media and churchmilitant.com is based, is within the boundaries of the Archdiocese of Detroit. So the legitimate authority of the Catholic Church is vested there in the Archbishop of Detroit. Now, it says they claim to be Catholic, but they are repudiated by the church. What was the exact word? Denounced by the church, which implies that there's some hypocrisy or some dishonesty, that they claim to be Catholic, but they're really not because it was denounced by the church. This is a point that brings in some canon law and also some theology. Theologically speaking, a baptized person who has been brought up in the Catholic Church, received the sacraments, is considered a Catholic. He is a Catholic if he holds the Catholic faith, if he is subject to the authority of the Church, and if he's baptized. That's what makes us members of the Church. Canonically speaking, he is a Catholic and remains a Catholic in good standing if he's all of that and he hasn't been excommunicated. He remains part of the church. So that describes an individual Catholic, somebody who's baptized, holds the faith, and is subject to the authority of the church. Now, such a person could disobey the authority of the church wrongfully disobey. Say that the church says you must do this and he disobeys and sins, but he's still a Catholic. In other words, it doesn't mean he's always obedient. It means he's subject to that authority, because Catholic bishops aren't going to go around commanding Methodist ministers what to do in their churches, or Presbyterians or Jews or Muslims, because they're not subject to them, right? So, but those of us who could legitimately get commanded by the bishops to do things, we are subject to their authority. That's what it means. Now, authority, of course, can be abused. You can get evil commands that have to be disobeyed, and you can get unjust commands that may be disobeyed. That's a separate question. But whether you're subject to their authority, I think I've made pretty plain what that means. So Michael Voris is a baptized Catholic. He's subject to the authority of the local bishop. He's in the Catholic Church canonically. Catholics can get together and organize and do Catholic things without the permission of the bishop. They can get together and pray. They can say the rosary. They can talk about politics. They can talk about politics from a Christian perspective, from a Catholic perspective. They can do things to influence the temporal order of society. And in fact, the church tells us they should. Vatican II says that the Catholic laity should do what they can to sanctify the temporal order of society. So this is encouraged. Now, Catholics can get together and form all sorts of groups that are private associations of the faithful in order to do various things, to live some sort of an apostolate, to encourage Eucharistic devotion, praying the rosary, to go around spreading the message of Fatima, to promote Marian devotion, devotion to St. Joseph, whatever. Various works, pro-life work, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, going around doing corporal works of mercy or spiritual works of mercy. Catholics can do that with no permission from the hierarchy. Catholics can do that and say, we're doing it because we love Jesus Christ. We're doing it because we're Catholic. Now, they can't call it Catholic soup kitchen without the permission of the local bishop. Canonically, they can't. Canonically, they can't do that. They could run a soup kitchen which has all Catholics in it, does Catholic stuff. They have holy Catholic pictures. They had a priest bless the place. They say grace before meals in the Catholic way. And everything is Catholic, 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 Catholic. But they can't call it Catholic soup kitchen. Why? Because canon law says you can't put the name Catholic in an organization without the permission of the local bishop. Now, if they go to the local bishop and say, can we call this the Catholic soup kitchen? And he says, yes, fine. If he says no, well, then they might call it St. Rita's soup kitchen. And they're still Catholics doing Catholic things, okay? This is a question of canon law. I mean, there's some common sense here too, but it's a question of canon law. And of course, canon law, like any good laws, has to be based on common sense, has to have commonsensical approaches to it. So St. Michael's Media, because they say things that are politically incorrect and things that are offensive to some people, because they are militant in that sense of being culture warriors, they offended certain powers that be within the Archdiocese of Detroit, and they didn't like the message. They didn't accuse them of heresy. They didn't publish any errors that were being promoted by Church Militant TV. It was probably all issues concerning tone, and you know, it was offensive and all that, and anti-ecumenical and whatever. But the bottom line is, these are Catholic people saying Catholic things, doing Catholic things, promoting Catholic things, promoting evangelism, promoting the necessity of the church for salvation, doing some amazingly good work. I'm not saying everything they do is great. I haven't seen all of it, but I liked what I've seen, and I'm very impressed by what Mr. Voris has done. And I've been friendly with Christine Niles. She interviewed me once, and I like the way they cover the news and so forth. But there's no question, these are Catholic people, and they're doing Catholic things. So the article saying that they claim to be Catholic but have been denounced by the church implies an awful lot more. It implies that there's some hypocrisy, which doesn't exist, and it implies that there's some falsehood, which, again, doesn't exist. Now, if somebody were to say, if somebody from the Archdiocese would come out and say Michael Voris is not a Catholic, Michael Voris could sue that person in a civil court and could even make make an action against that person in a canonical court, because we have canonical rights as Catholics. So that's kind of a little slimy aspect of the article there. But let's get back to the Simon Wiesenthal Center, because, and I'm not going to harp on some of these issues in a frantic or hysterical way, because there's no reason for hysteria. Because by the way, it's the liberals that are all hysterical. Let's just be logical and commonsensical. What is the Simon Wiesenthal Center? It's named after the famous so-called Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal, a survivor of the Jewish Holocaust in World War II. And got himself famous by hunting down Nazis. And this center was named after him. And the Simon Wiesenthal Center is one of these organizations that it calls itself a human rights organization. There are similar organizations. There's the Anti-Defamation League, which is also Jewish. But then you have other organizations that have nothing to do with Judaism, at least not officially. They're not it's not Jews that run it, and it's not exclusively Jewish issues that they promote, like the Southern Poverty Law Center. And in most cases, these are organizations that go around fundraising by making people look like boogeymen and then saying, we are here to protect you from these people. So in the case of the Southern Poverty Law Center, they're famous for this. Trust me, I am the poster child for radical traditionalist Catholicism on the Southern Poverty Law Center's website. They have detracted us. They've lied about us and done their own slimy reports on us. This is why I can do an anatomy of a hack job, because hack jobs have been done on us. Now, the Southern Poverty Law Center lies. They say untrue things. They make baseless, wild, reckless accusations, which are not substantiated. But they get away with it because they're all lawyered up and nobody's gonna sue them, especially some tiny little organization. But what they do is they take somebody and villainize him, vilify him, demonize him, and then they say, this is the new Hitler. This is the person we are here to protect you from. And by our human rights advocacy and by our grassroots organizing and by our sending reports out to local law enforcement, local federal and state law enforcement, by the way, in the case of the Southern Poverty Law Center, we are protecting you from these people. Please help us to continue to do that work. So in the case of the Southern Poverty Law Center, they take lots of some of these organizations that they go after are legitimately slimy, okay? The Ku Klux Klan and other organizations that nobody's going to say are good people. But then they mix in other people like us, like other organizations that Father Gruner's Fatima Apostolate, Michael Matt and the Remnant, and other organizations, and they say these are vicious, you know, Catholic fanatics, and they're racist and bigots and all this, and they must be stopped. And that's how they fundraise. Okay, what eventually happens is that the liberal media, which of course is losing its monopoly on news, as we've said, the liberal media uses these fellow travelers, these comrades in arms, as their go-to men and their experts. So just like, say, politicians in Washington, D.C. use all the information that's given to by the different think tanks that feed politicians of different ideologies with whatever information they think needs to be promoted. So they have all these D.C. think tanks, you know, neocon think tanks and liberal think tanks and whatever. Well, you've got similar organizations, and they call themselves human rights organizations, that are constantly feeding the media the party line. Southern Poverty Law Center does it, so they're constantly being cited by different media outlets. The Simon Wiesenthal Center is another, the ADL is another, and their name is Legion. There are lots of these organizations. But the Simon Wiesenthal Center has its own agenda. They're not hunting down Nazis anymore. I mean, I don't think there are any left to hunt down. I mean, any of the war criminals anyway left to hunt down. But they have an agenda, and they want to influence the way Christians teach. They want to influence the way Christians teach Christianity. They want to influence the way Catholic priests and bishops and even popes teach about the Christian faith. They have – and every factual claim I'm going to make now is backed up. And if you call me out on any of these things as factual errors, I will send you the link to substantiate it. They perpetrated slanders against Pope Pius XII being indifferent to the Nazi persecution of the Jews. Now, this charge against Pius XII, who was called Hitler's Pope, not by the Simon Wiesenthal Center, but by another author, this charge has been debunked many times, including by two Jewish historians, one of them Sir Martin Gilbert, a British Jew, and another Rabbi David G. Dalin, who is, I believe, an American Jew and a rabbi. He wrote a book called The Myth of Hitler's Pope. They being the Simon Wiesenthal Center, they have attacked Arab Catholic bishops for upholding the rights of Palestinians. This is a fact. They also condemned the Kairos document, which was an ecumenical Christian effort to assert the rights of persecuted Palestinians in the Holy Land. They attacked it viciously as being, again, anti-Semitic, because it was anti-Israel. Because if you say anything critical of the state of Israel, of course, you are an anti-Semite, according to the Simon Wiesenthal Center. They criticized the canonization of the German Carmelite nun, Sister Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, also known as St. Edith Stein. Now, why would they criticize the canonization of a Jewish nun, of a Jewish woman who became a Catholic Carmelite nun? Well, they did it. They said it was, quote, an extremely negative message to the Jewish community, end quote. And they called the move, quote, outrageous and, quote, a very public slap in the face to the Jewish community, end quote. So they're questioning our rights to canonize our own saints. They approvingly quoted a liberal Catholic so-called theologian making the outrageous and insulting claim that canonizing Saints Maximilian Kolbe and Edith Stein was a Catholic effort to appropriate the Holocaust for ourselves. Now, this is, but aside the fact that it's gravely insulting, it's unjust. This is unjust. These were two great saints. And whether or not they were killed at the same time that certain Jews were killed, lots of Jews were killed by an evil, murderous regime that was killing Catholic priests as well as Jews. Whether or not that's the case, this was not an effort for the Catholics to kind of cut into the action and steal the limelight from Jewish people. This is an insult to the Church and to these great saints. The Catholic Church has the right to canonize her own saints. And nobody can tell us you can't do that. They criticize what they call supersessionism or replacement theology. Now, I already talked about this, but again, let me expand that just a little bit. This is the simple biblical notion found in the New Testament that the Church is the new Israel. In other words, that the Catholic Church is the heir to the promises made to the faithful of the Old Testament. Yes, the new covenant replaces the old covenant. It does. And Jeremiah the prophet foretold that it was going to do that in Jeremiah 31:31. Look it up in your Bible. Jeremiah 31:31, it was prophesied in the Hebrew scriptures that the old covenant would be replaced by a new covenant. And that is the covenant that's in Christ's precious blood. Yes, the new covenant even supersedes the old, inasmuch as it is more excellent. Of course it's more excellent. The covenant in Christ's blood is much more excellent than the covenant that was made with Moses on Mount Sinai. And in saying this, I'm simply saying what St. Paul says in his epistle to the Hebrews. All you have to do is read the epistle to the Hebrews, and you will see that this is the bread and butter of the Christian faith. This is not something that I'm making up, and it's got absolutely nothing to do with hating people. It has everything to do with bringing people the true message of Jesus Christ and His Church. So we only have a couple of minutes left, and I don't know if it's time to open up a new subject that's in the article. But I encourage you, go to Catholicism.org and look up the article that we called, again, under the pen name The Philosopher. We called it On Michael Voris and Church Militant, USA Today Doesn't Get It. And from there, you can go to the USA Today site that has that long article. You have to know how to read these kinds of things. And when you read an organization being cited, you know, oh, an expert from this organization says this, that, and the other thing. What you've got there is one side of the culture wars sniping another side of the culture wars. I could set myself up as a media personality, which I don't know. I guess technically I am, since I do this and you're listening. It makes me a media personality, a very minor one. I could set myself up as a media personality and interview people from whatever organization I wanted and have them tell me about other organizations giving me their opinions on those other organizations. And they might be experts because they may have studied these organizations. But when USA Today does it, it has the veneer of respectability that comes with an enormous newspaper, okay? But the playing field is getting a bit leveled nowadays with social media and the internet and all that stuff, and they don't like it. So this is them sort of screaming that that they're not happy about this. You've been listening to Reconquest on the Crusade Premium channel of the Veritas Radio Network. This is Brother Andre Marie. Again, go to reconquest.net and catholicism.org to keep up with what we're doing. God bless and Merry Christmas.